Now Henry Jones and a pretty little queen took a ride one day in his big limousine. The car kicked up and the engine wouldn't crank. There wasn't any gas in the gasoline tank. Just about that time along came Nord, and he rambled right along in his little old Ford. He stole that queen as his engine sang a song, and his little old Ford just rambled right along. His little old Ford rambled right along, and the little old Ford rambled right along. The gas ran out in the big machine, but the darned little Ford don't need gasoline. The big limousine had to back downhill, but the blamed little Ford is going up still. When it runs out of dope, just fill it up with soap, and the little Ford will ramble right along. Now they ran over glass and they ran over nails. They ran over pigs and puppy dog tails. They spotted a cop and shot out of sight. They rambled all day till almost night. They smashed up fences and telegraph poles. Ran into ditches and deep chuck holes. They bumped into a preacher and the preacher took a ride. Then the Ford rambled on with Johnny and his bride. The little old Ford rambled right along, and the little old Ford rambled right along. Round the corner and he ran into a mule, and the darned old donkey kicked like a fool. He brayed and he balked and he kicked the wheels, but he had to quit kicking to save his heels. When she blows out a tire, just wrap it up with wire, and the little Ford will ramble right along. You can smash the top and smash up the seat. Twist it out of shape till both ends meet. Smash the body and rip out a gear. Smash up the front and smash up the rear. Bend up the fender and rip off the tires. Break up the lamps and cut out the wires. Throw in the clutch to the dickens with the juice, and the little old Ford will go to beat the juice. The little old Ford, it rambled right along, and the little old Ford, it rambled right along. Now cut that out, you naughty tease. 'Tis a left-hand drive and a right-hand squeeze. Patch it up with a piece of string, chewing gum, or any old thing. When the power gets sick, just hit it with a brick, and the little Ford will ramble right along.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program with me, your host, Mac, back in the studio tonight just with one little old gramophone. But I'm not here alone. Tonight I have a guest who is Mr. Tony Donato, who was my guest about a year and a half ago, and he's back again to share some records with us. So welcome back, Tony.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Thanks for having me back.
I'm well, and it's really great to have you back to play some music for us.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun last time, and last time we recorded it in advance, and this time we're live.
Right, I like doing it live. So how has the last year been for you of collecting records?
It's been great. You know, I've been finding them wherever I can. I have a couple favorite haunts I go to. I'm still new enough at it where I'm still just finding things randomly, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm really enjoying it. Like right. This one we just heard, Billy Murray, The Little Ford Rambled Right Along.
A great one.
From 1915.
Fun one.
It's a 100-year-old record right here. It's great.
I once did something where I played the disc and the cylinder simultaneously.
Really?
And sort of sunk them up. Eventually, they added an extra verse on the cylinder. So that's when they sort of went out. But up until a certain point, they were exactly right on.
You mean they issued it as a disc and a cylinder simultaneously?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how simultaneous it was, but it was definitely Billy Murray doing the version. And
oh, that's cool.
On disc for Victor and for Edison. And I have a disc version by Arthur Fields.
I guess that's roughly analogous to like when in the 50s that they had like 78 to 45s at the same time.
Yeah, know. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can get it on VHS, you can get it on Betamax.
Yeah, and then, later disc. You can get things on 8-track.
Right. Exactly.
Can you get Billy Murray on 8-track?
What? I don't know. I don't think originally, but I'm sure there's someone who recorded some cylinders onto an 8-track recorder.
Yes.
And then halfway through the song, it would do that click to change the track.
That's right.
I remember that. All right. So what are we in for tonight, Tony?
I picked out just a bunch of fun tunes. They range from 1915 to 1929, which is the prime jazz age for me.
All right, and that's one of my favorite topics. The Little Ford Rambled Right Along was our starter from 1915.
Yes.
Well, let's move right on to our next record. So what's it going to be?
I got Jack Shilkret and his orchestra, If You Knew Susie, from 1925.
Oh, I love that one. All right, here we go. There's Billy Murray again.
That wasn't Billy Murray again.
Who was it?
That was Jack Shilkret and his orchestra.
Yeah, but who did the chorus? Who did the vocal chorus?
I don't know.
It sounded like Billy.
It may very well be.
I think it was Billy.
On the label.
It was Billy.
Okay.
It's like sort of when you hear Brian May's guitar tone,
That's true. That's true.
When you hear Billy Murray's voice, you know it. A lot of times the vocal refrain would be uncredited.
As it is on this record.
Yeah, and
it
is uncredited. That was him.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, he's everywhere.
You have a more sophisticated ear than I have at this point about this kind of thing.
It happens over time.
That's true. When selecting these records, in many cases, I try to, because a lot of people who might be listening may be new to this themselves.
Right.
And I picked some tunes that might have entered the Americana lexicon, if I'm using the right words here.
Definitely.
And most people have heard some rendition of If You Knew Susie. So I figure this would be a good way to, if people are learning about this era of music for the first time, to kind of get them in with tunes that they have heard in some fashion.
I think there's more songs than artists that people will recognize from the period. People will know, If You Knew Susie, the Charleston, Ain't We Got Fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of them. So, yeah, absolutely. Well, next we have one of the best-sounding acoustic labels, the Harmony label.
Yeah, it's a really great one. And what I love about a lot of these Harmony label recordings is that they tend to have very simple orchestrations and arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know whether that was strictly a stylistic thing or maybe they just couldn't afford to hire orchestras.
I had some good orchestras.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And but you know the story of them. It was Columbia's new studio that they built
right
at the end of the acoustic era. Then suddenly electricity's back. Electricity's here, and we're using microphones. We have to build a new studio. Well, we just built this thing, so let's have a subsidiary label, and we'll crank out some stuff for a while as long as we can and use this studio.
And this is Honey Duke and his uke, Hot Coffee.
Nice one.
Hungry as sin, walk right in. Ask for a bill of fare. Open my eyes with surprise at someone waiting there. Said, dear, look here. Oh, babe, I just want you near. Cuddle your charms in my arms. Gives me kisses. There's where bliss is. Hot coffee, you talk a turtle dovin. Hot coffee, I never knew such lovin'. Hot coffee, there never was an oven that could ever be one half so hot. Hot coffee, all sugared up and creamy. Hot coffee ain't nothing else but steamy. I've been petting quite a lot, but nobody's got petting like the sweetie's got. Lead me to it. Hot coffee, red hot. I get one real pet, my appetite behaves. Hold tight, good night, you sure do your stuff all right. Do it some more, then some more. You're my honey for my money. Hot coffee, you talk a turtle dovin. Hot coffee, I never knew such lovin. Hot coffee, there never was an oven that could ever be one half so hot. Hot coffee, all sugared up and creamy. Hot coffee ain't nothing else to see me. I've been petting quite a lot, but nobody's got petting like the sweetie's got. Lead me to it. Hot coffee, red hot.
Honey Duke, a.k.a. Johnny Marvin there.
Oh, okay.
Doing his thing.
Doing a little research on the fly there.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you can ever find Johnny Marvin cylinders, they're in the 5000 series of Edison. They're fantastic. Very rare.
Yeah, that's a whole other field of research for me.
Yeah.
Haven't even gotten into the cylinders yet.
Okay, but great stuff. Nice, always sounding. Love his instrument... mimicking,
the vocalization.
Yeah,
it sort of sounded like a kazoo.
Yeah, he did it. He did kazoos, all sorts of stuff. Fun. He always does that vocal stuff.
That's true.
Really good. All right. What year was that one from?
Honey Duke and His Uke, 1926.
1926.
I'm kind of jumping around here.
That's fine.
And,
great one.
Next, we got the Imperial Dance Orchestra.
Oh, who are Imperial Dance Orchestra? What label is that?
Banner.
Yeah, Banner's another dime store label.
That's right.
One of those.
You know, it's funny. Some of my favorite records seem to be on those subsidiary dime store labels.
Harmony. I love Harmony Records. I always pick them up. They're the best sounding acoustics. Banners can be really good. Some can be really bad. Romeo's are not that great. There's some labels that are a little cheaper. But, you know, if it's a good song... Madison is also questionable sometimes, but sometimes they're well done. You never know. Mm-hmm. So even Victor Records, even though they had standards, once in a while you get one. Like, they didn't record that very well. I don't know what they were thinking. But what do we care? It's all lo-fi.
Yeah, exactly.
We love the lo-fi. The lower-fi, the better. All right, so the Imperial Dance Orchestra.
When the Red, Red Robin Comes Bob, Bob, Bobbing Along.
This is one of those that people will know.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Yeah, hot number there. Very hot.
Yes, it was. You know, it's funny. I noticed during the instrumental break, they kind of broke into a few refrains of Listen to the Mockingbird.
Listen to the Mockingbird, of course. It's a bird song. Let's drop in some more bird references.
That's right.
Let's get Dr. Charles Kellogg to whistle a few bars for us, maybe.
You know, I was wondering about that. I wonder how tough it was, because maybe in 1926 that was still an acoustic recording.
That sounded electric.
Yeah. But even so, it was still, you know, one microphone and everyone's gathered around it, right?
Right.
And I wonder how many takes it took to know how close the whistler should be to the microphone.
Well, you remember every session they would do some test takes.
Sure.
Back to them. So they would get it all tweaked up. And remember, they had the pusher, too.
The pusher.
The pusher.
What does that mean? The,
when you had a singer, because it was acoustic, there's no compression. So if you're singing low notes, you got to be closer to the mic, to the horn.
That's true.
If you're singing loud notes, you got to be further away.
Right.
So
the
pusher, what I'd say as they were singing, push them closer and pull them away from the horn to adjust their proximity to the recording.
So whereas today, somebody pushes a fader on a mixing board. Back then, somebody was literally pushing.
Well, they have compression now. It's gonna crush it down as they hit those louder notes. Yeah. Now they got the pusher instead of the slider.
That's funny.
Yep. There's actually a good scene in some movie, I forget what it is, where the singer and the pusher get into a fight.
What movie is that? That sounds great. I would love to see that.
Someone please remind us on the playlist what that movie that was. There's a scene from it. Because he's pushing him. He's getting angry. He's getting pushed around, the singer. And eventually they start fighting. Pretty funny.
That's great.
That sounded like Arthur Fields, by the way, on that vocal refrain on the Red Red Robin.
It doesn't say, but I think you're right.
Once again.
Yep, exactly.
Once again. Sounded like him. Man for hire. Sure. You got Red Red Robin today? Sure. You got Black Black Robin tomorrow? Sure. Pink Pink Robin? Whatever color Robin you got. I'm there. I'm ready to sing it. What do we got next, Tony?
Well, I got the Coon Sanders original Nighthawk Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to Charleston back to Charleston. Now, the Charleston had been a huge hit earlier that year.
Right.
And of course, you know, that's one of the, like, pop culture phenomenons, you know, the Charleston.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I guess they wanted to kind of keep that buzz going with the Charleston, you know.
You know.
I guess they repeated that in the 60s, right? You had the Twist.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year you had Let's Twist again.
Right. And Return of the Son of the Twists, there was.
It's funny. So here's the Coon Sanders original Nighthawk Orchestra, keeping that Charleston going with I'm Gonna Charleston Back to Charleston.
Thank you.
Nice arrangement there. The Coon Sanders Orchestra, led by drummer Carlton Coon and pianist Joe Sanders.
That was 1925.
Yep, big Kansas band, and they had a long, illustrious career into the 30s.
That's true.
And, great band. Always great arrangements. They got better as they went along. Unlike a lot of bands who do their greatest work first and then start to suck.
Like the Bay City Rollers.
Well, yeah, exactly. Actually, they got better and better after Saturday Night. Oh, those you couldn't. That second and third record, they're the best ones. They did. Seminal records.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. You are listening to the Antique Phonograph Music Program with me, your host, Mac. And tonight is one of those nights I love where I have a guest coming in who's here sharing his records with us, my friend and fellow collector, Mr. Tony Donato, who's a relatively new collector. You've been collecting for about 3 years now of gramophones and machines.
2 years. Next month will be 2 years since I got my first antique phonograph. I had always wanted them and always been interested, and finally I did the necessary research. Because, you know, when you're new at this kind of thing, it can be very intimidating because...
Right.
You're afraid of getting, you're afraid of what we talk about, like, you know, as, you know, crapophones, you know, and you're worried about getting ripped off. And
crapophone is the modern machines that are made in India and China.
Yes, to superficially look like.
They're made to look like antiques, and a lot of people get fooled by them.
Right.
Because they don't know any better.
Right. And I'm not talking about the people who make... reproductions and sell them as such. I'm not trying to slag anything like that. I'm talking about the con artists who try to pass the phony stuff off.
Well, sometimes the dealers don't know it's a crapophone.
Well, yeah.
And they're selling it. They're like, oh, it's an antique machine. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a modern thing made to look old. They're like, what are you talking about? I was told. I'm like, I'm telling you, it's not. They don't want to believe it.
Yep. No, exactly. And if you're if you really want to collect a vintage period machine, you really have to know what to look for. You know, just today I was listening to NPR and they were talking about the art world forgeries and how painters can fool real collectors. You know.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why put this much effort into making a forgery? Is that much money in it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Well, I guess there is.
If they can build an antique gramophone out of some crappy parts, and it costs them almost nothing, mm-hmm. and they can sell it for $500. That's a good markup.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You know, and if you're the kind of person who, you know, maybe you just want something for decorative purposes, you want something that evokes that look. And you know that's what you're buying, and you want that, and that's fine.
I don't think anyone really wants a crapophone.
No, I think you're right about that.
I think get them, they're like, oh, it looks good. Because a lot of people that I see who get them, they're, oh, it looked so good. And I'm like, you know what it is? No, it's an old antique. No, it's not.
No, it's not. I guess the analogy I use is a lot of people will buy a reproduction of a work of art, knowing that it's a reproduction.
Right.
And they're happy to hang that on the wall, and they're happy with that, and that's fine. And if you're happy with something that looks antique-y and that's all you're going for, and you haven't been misled, that's fine too. But I did the necessary research, and I got my first machine, and I got a VV405, and I don't know if that's too much detail for your listeners necessarily.
Let them look up what that model is, VV-405.
Yeah, it's a console from 1924, and... a beautiful piece of furniture, as well as an exquisite machine, and then I ended up getting a portable, one of the VV50s
for your picnics.
Yeah, for my frequent picnics
and the gramophone picnics.
The first iPod, you know.
Right.
And just a few months ago, I hosted a Victrola listening party at home.
That's right. You invited me tonight. I was somewhere else though.
Yeah, you blew me off.
Yeah. I can't be everywhere at once.
No, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. And in fact, a lot of my friends who were there are probably listening to the show tonight. And,
great.
It was great fun. It was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah.
And we should mention that you've been learning a lot from our group on Facebook called Antique Phonograph
Enthusiasts.
Yeah, and it's an open group. It's got experts. It's got novices. It's got newbies. Mm-hmm. People come on all the time saying, I've always really wanted to own an antique gramophone, but I don't know the first thing about
it. It can be intimidating.
Yeah, so we're there to sort of offer advice and give them ideas. People will be in a store. I see this thing. They want $400 for it. Is that too much? And they'll instantly get feedback. So yep. I like that it's an instant feedback forum for people, and it's very helpful.
I know. But, you know, occasionally some of the members can be a little intimidating, too, because then their zeal.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well.
It's like, let's be nice about this.
I know. We try to temper them.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
No, dude, exactly. Take it easy. It's just antique gramophones.
Right.
And I'm really strict on that. It's like, if you mention religion, if you mention anything else except something that cranks up and plays a gramophone, I delete it.
Well, you know, it's like sometimes you get into like sci-fi discussions with sci-fi fans about Star Wars versus Star Trek. And I'm
right.
Like, oh, and they get really passionate about it, you know? And
oh,
it could,
yeah.
It could be like that, too, about this kind of thing.
That's what it should be. That's what the place
well,
is.
Well, yeah, I think everybody should have one thing at least that just gets them that excited.
Right.
That they want to, like, you know, nitpick it down to the minutia, you know?
Here's my life philosophy. Hobby, work, don't be a jerk. That's what you need.
Sounds good.
That's what you need to be happy.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. It's very simple.
I know, exactly. And of course, you know, I'm the kind of person who, when I develop a passion for something and I start pursuing it, I don't do it halfway. It's like I just go full tilt. You know, whether it's the antique phonographs, the music, or my own music, you know, with my band or records I produce, that kind of thing. I just go at it.
Well, it's hard to do that with these also because people want to dive in. It's like, okay, where do I go? And then they'll see the crap of phone. Like, okay, there it is. I got to buy it because I really want to get into this. Like, no, you got to wait for the right
That's
machine.
Right. That's right.
You got to wait for the records. You got to wait. You got to be out there and doing it. But I remember making some mistakes in buying.
Sure.
In my early days, because I really wanted to get some more machines.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up overpaying, and they weren't very good. So it's hard once you want to get into it. It's not like you could just – well, you can just walk into a store and find them. Sometimes there are a few of them around. But it's more of the fun of hunting and knowing – getting to develop what you're interested in, knowing what you're looking for, and then finally getting it, if you
yeah.
can do that.
I haven't developed any kind of big drive to just get more and more machines. I find that the two that I have, the console and the portable, are good for me for now.
Yeah.
But it has acted as, the term I use is gateway drug.
You know, yeah.
Having the machines has acted as a conduit for me to find these wonderful
Absolutely.
Records. So my emphasis has veered from the machines, because I can also play these on my stereo, you know,
Absolutely.
on my turntable. I have a cartridge to play the 78s.
Right.
You know, and I can enjoy them that way as well.
We know that some people start and they've started years ago, decades ago, and they have 50, 100 or more machines. And other people
That's
just want to have one to play records because they really like it. So it's a hobby that you can dip your toe into or you can immerse yourself into.
That's right. One day I would love to own a credenza.
Me too.
You know, the orthophonic.
Yeah.
The orthophonic based on what I've been reading, the Victor's orthophonic machines, they started in 1925. It was, from what I understand, the record industry's first ever attempt at hi-fi.
Oh, and it works.
Yeah.
Oh,
my God.
They sound fantastic. Have you heard one in
person? Oh, absolutely. My friend Kevin, he's probably listening right now.
they sound great.
Has a credenza. The bass response
yes.
is much wider.
And, well, because they started recording bass, because this is also simultaneously with them switching from the acoustic method, which is a very thin bandwidth
right.
capability of recording, to the microphone, which expanded it tremendously.
It did. It did.
And they needed a way to play that back.
But it wasn't just the microphone. The credenza, the orthophonic machines, had a very long folded horn
yes.
inside the cabinet, which
yes.
helped accentuate, which I found surprising because I would have guessed the longer and bigger the horn, it would have lost power.
Mm.
Coming from the reproducer. But no, apparently those Victor guys knew what they were doing.
It was an Edison thing, the exponential horn. There's something about the exponential curve.
Oh, Edison originated it?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Victor kind of co-opted it or something?
Oh, it's just a basic design phenomenon.
It just becomes it's just common knowledge then.
Right.
Okay, yeah. But if I do ever get hold of a credenza, Yeah, I would definitely snap that up.
You could bring that down and play some records.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll lug the credenza.
Credenza is a big piece of furniture.
Yes, yes, it is. Big. Should we get back to the music?
Let's do that. What do we got next?
I got. We're going to go back a few years here to 1917. Earl Fuller and his famous jazz band doing Lil Liza Jane.
Oh, now, man, I love this song.
Yeah, I had when I found this record, I had never even heard of Earl Fuller. And I figured, what the heck, I'll take a chance. And these records are cheap enough to do that. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. So here we have
fantastic one.
Earl Fuller and his famous jazz band, Lil Liza Jane.
What I love about that number is it's just like so raucous.
Yeah.
Guys are, I feel like the guys are on the edge of their seat with that song.
That's right. And in 1917, when they did this track, it seems that for the most part, jazz hadn't achieved that swing that we think of.
Right.
When
oh,
we think
no,
of
no.
like roaring toys. So this was much more strident. It was almost like a marching band.
Yeah. It's sort of that mid-level between the marching band and Dixieland jazz.
That's it. Yes, exactly.
They're sort of, and you know, the original Dixieland band was just in 1917. So jazz on record is just burgeoning at this point.
That's right. Yeah, and the original Dixieland jazz band, that was LaRocca.
Yeah, Nick LaRocca.
Yeah, and the Livery Stable Blues.
Yeah, that was like the first
official jazz record released in 1917. Right. I want to get a copy of that. I'd like to find one.
Yeah, you know. They're not that uncommon.
Right.
But there are a few transitional bands. Like Earl Fuller, I feel like, are kind of on the edge of being jazz. But Conway's band did some certain things that are kind of jazzy.
That's right.
There are certain piano players. Like, oh, is it ragtime or is it jazz? It's that blurred line of what is what.
And that's part of what I like about those late teens records, that transitioning from that more marching band kind of sound into jazz.
Yep. Well, let's keep on moving ahead. What's next?
Well, here's something interesting. Louis Armstrong with...
Who?
Louis Armstrong. You ever heard of him?
Never heard of him.
With the Red Onion Jazz Babies.
Really?
Now, this is really interesting. This is from 1924. Now, granted, I'm a novice to all this. I'm sure that more knowledgeable people would have more information on this. But he did his famous Hot 5 recordings starting in 1925.
Okay.
And this is 1924, so this is just the year before. And I know that prior to becoming a band leader, he was like a cornetist in King Oliver's band.
Yeah, he played with Bessie Smith, too.
Right, right. So he must have done, like, a series of, like, one-off dates with a whole bunch of ensembles here and there.
I know he did a lot of dates all around. He was getting around.
Yeah, starting to make a name for himself.
He had a reputation, and, yeah.
So for me, this I thought this was a nice find for someone
Definitely.
Like me who was learning all this stuff, you know, from scratch.
Hey, that's the thing. You get out there, you're searching around. It's like, wow, I found a nice early Louis Armstrong. Woohoo!
Yeah, exactly.
That makes your day.
Yeah, exactly.
There's 10 other days you go out, you find crap. Maybe nothing. But
yeah, but you know, I'm still at the phase now where no matter what I end up buying, I'll learn something from it. You know, whether even right. if I don't like it, at least I'll develop a taste for what I know I don't like, you know.
You kind of got to go out by yourself and do this, because if you go with another record collector, you're going to get in a fight over who grabbed which record first. And I tried going garage selling this past weekend. I was upstate with my girlfriend and her aunt, and they were like, "Oh, we're going into some bad neighborhoods." Oh, we're looking at other people's crap. I was like, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You have to have a very patient partner. We're going to go to the Antiques Mall. Let's just go to the Antiques Mall and look around there. And
yeah, if you're into the whole antique phonograph thing and collecting the 78s, you and you're in a relationship, you have to have a partner who either loves it with you or is just very tolerant.
You know, it's good to be able to get together with people and share the hobby, but invariably there will be stretches of time where you're alone with it, which yes. is fine. I like alone time.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So let's carry on here with Louis Armstrong and the Red Onion Jazz Babies doing Terrible Blues from 1924.
Thank you.
right. Excellent one. I was just reading a little bit about them, and Sidney Bechet was also in that group.
Sidney Bechet is part of the Red Onion Jazz Babies?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Right. So
that's fun to learn.
They, from what the Wikipedia entry says, they were a short-lived band, but really made some seminal recordings, including that one. They mentioned specifically Terrible Blues.
Oh, so this was a nice little find for me then.
Absolutely.
Cool.
For sure, for sure. Tony, you know, time goes fast here on the show,
so let's
jump right to our next record. What do you say, and get
course,
it done?
Yeah, we got Jack Chapman and his Drake Hotel Orchestra, Dream Daddy.
Oh, we're not doing the sneak?
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong one.
You said we was doing the sneak.
You're right.
What kind of sneaky move is that?
You're right.
I'm trying to play the sneak, and you want to do not the sneak.
Yes, you're right. We are going to do the Club Royal Orchestra with the sneak.
Let's do it.
With an exclamation point on it, no less, from 1922.
Nice one there. All right.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise.
Yeah, really good one. Let's move on, Tony. We have time for a few more. I want to get into I enjoy talking with you about stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's always great
but,
fun.
But I don't want it to be an all-talking show. We want to get some songs in. So what are we going to do next?
Lou Gold and his orchestra doing Broken Hearted from 1927. While I'm yakking, I'm also changing needles on the phonograph and cranking it up. So I'm trying to remain effervescent and charming while doing these.
That's what we do here. We change needles as we go.
Change needles and crank here while talking, and Mike is working the mixing board and the computer.
I'm
okay.
Mixing board and playlists.
Start it up.
Someone's got to. Go for it.
Lou Gold and his orchestra, Broken Hearted from 1927. Thank you.
There he is, my old pal, but here am I, broken hearted, mine in May, his in June, she forgot mighty soon, and here am I, broken hearted. Well, the last time that we said goodbye, I knew that she was through. It's bad enough that I lost her, I had to lose him too. There they go, in their joy, happy girl and lucky boy, but here am I, broken
Nice tempo there. Very typical of a lot of these dance bands that we know from the period.
That's true. And that's well within the electric period. And you can tell that with the advent of the microphone, crooning came in. You know, singers could suddenly have a more laid back like vocal approach. You can hear it clearly on that track.
Right. I love when they get on the microphone. Like
that, like that oily thing.
Say some songs. Oh, baby, I love you.
Do we have time for one more?
Well, we're going to have time for one more. We're gonna talk for another 2 minutes, and then we're going to say goodbye.
All right.
That's how it's going to work out.
Sounds good.
So I want to thank you for coming down to sharing the music with us.
Thank you, Mike.
For sharing
it's great fun.
Yeah, it's always good to have guests on to get their perspectives. And I always tell people, if you are a collector of discs or cylinders or both, always welcome you to come down on be on the show. It's painful, right, Tony? It's painless, I mean. Sorry. Which one is it, Tony?
It's really quite fun.
Yeah. So you can send an email to me to mac@wfmu.org, mac@wfmu.org. And, Tony, I'd welcome you to come back again. It's always good
anytime
to hear about what your discoveries
are.
I really
had a lot of fun here.
And to talk with you about this stuff. You know, I told you, bring 15 records. We got to 10.
Oh, sure.
Because I know that when I do my show, I try to be stealthy about it. It's like, really just play the music and not talk, but when I have someone, I like to talk about them.
Right,
I think people like to hear what's going on and hear the experiences of other collectors, and we're already disseminating information to folks about stuff.
There
and you've
go.
Got lots of compliments on here. People are saying, you know, great to hear you on the show, and there's other playlist comments there.
To which, you or me?
Both.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
People are enjoying it. So what do we have to take us out tonight, Tony?
To play us out, I'm going to wrap it up with something from 1921, the Yerkes Jazzarimba Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those Americana tunes that everybody will know, Ain't We Got Fun.
Oh, definitely.
Yep.
Folks, keep in mind, I'll be back next week with more stuff. You can see a picture of Tony. I put you on Instagram.
Wow.
Phonograph DJ Mac on Instagram. That's Phonograph DJ Mac. All sorts of other Phonograph related photos on there. I only put Phonograph related. I'll be back next week with more stuff. Thanks again, Tony. Until next time, nighty night, everybody. Thank you. is WFMU East Orange and WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.1. Oh no, that's 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org.
We'll be right back.